So imagine buying this massive, sprawling mansion. But instead of actually paying for it, you take out a gigantic mortgage and basically force the mansion itself to work a grueling 9-to-5 job just to pay off its own debt.
Right, which sounds completely absurd.
Exactly. But today, that exact scenario is playing out to the tune of $55 billion in the gaming world. Welcome to the Deep Dive, by the way.
Yeah, we are looking at a really massive stack of sources from August 5th, 2026.
And I mean, the sheer scale of the headlines today is honestly hard to wrap your head around. We're talking about that $55 billion video game buyout, giant mechanical chopsticks trying to pluck a 40-story rocket out of the sky.
Which is still just wild to visualize.
Seriously. And then also the hidden physical multi-billion dollar costs of the invisible AI war.
It's just a profound collision of, hardware, software, and massive capital. We're really seeing physical infrastructure straining under the weight of all this digital ambition.
And that is exactly our mission for this deep dive. We've got six massive headlines across tech, gaming, and space. We're going to connect the dots, extract those aha moments, and make sure you walk away as the most well-informed person in the room, without the typical information overload.
Right, skip the noise, just the core takeaways.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the biggest number on the board. Electronic Arts, the giant behind EA Sports FC, Madden, Apex Legends, The Sims sold for $55 billion.
Yeah, this officially closes the second largest gaming acquisition in history, trailing only Microsoft's purchase of Activision Blizzard.
Wow.
So after 36 years as a publicly traded company, EA has gone private. The buyer consortium is led by Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund, or PIF, which now owns 94% of the company.
Okay, 94%, that's huge.
Right. And Silver Lake, which is a major private equity firm, and Affinity Partners, managed by Jared Kushner, are also involved. So shareholders walked away with $210 per share in cash.
Which was a massive 25% premium when the deal was first announced back in, what, 2025. But going back to that mansion analogy from earlier, this was a leveraged buyout, an LBO.
Yes, a classic LBO structure.
Right. So the buyers put down a fraction of their own capital and financed the rest with debt. But they put that debt directly onto EA's books. EA is now saddled with roughly $18 billion in new debt that it has to service using its own future earnings.
Which is a crushing amount of pressure for any company.
But wait, hold on. I mean, I get capital efficiency, but putting $18 billion of debt on a video game company seems fundamentally reckless when the buyers have so much cash.
Yeah, on paper, it does seem counterintuitive.
Right. The sources say Saudi Arabia's PIF is incredibly well-funded. Their subsidiary, Savvy Games Group, literally set aside a $38 billion fund just for gaming investments as part of their Vision 2030 economic diversification plan. So if they have the cash, why burden EA like this? Are they just treating the company like a casino chip?
Well, it really comes down to how massive funds manage global risk. By utilizing debt, they keep their actual cash liquid to deploy across other sectors like, tech, sports, renewable energy.
Oh, I see.
But you're absolutely right about the burden. The historical reality of an LBO of this magnitude is incredibly harsh on the acquired company.
Because of the interest payments, right.
Exactly. When you drop $18 billion of debt onto a creative studio, the immediate crushing pressure is cash flow. You have to make those massive interest payments. The industry analysts are already modeling widespread layoffs, studio closures, and project cancellations.
Because they just can't afford a flop. Like if a new game fails, they default on the debt.
Right. Under this kind of financial structure, companies become ruthlessly risk-averse. The mechanics of game development will fundamentally shift here.
So no more weird experimental indie games from EA.
Definitely not. Expect EA to lean heavily into proven franchises with guaranteed recurring revenue streams. Specifically, they're going to rely on their sports titles with ultimate team microtransactions rather than taking a risk on an innovative, unproven new IP.
And the community reaction is definitely reflecting that anxiety. There's a real
Uh-oh.
split in the sources.
Yeah, it's very polarizing.
Some gamers point out that having a sovereign wealth fund's backing means EA is free from that, like, 90-day pressure cooker of quarterly public earnings
Which
reports.
is a valid point.
But on the other side, there are loud concerns about Saudi Arabia's human rights record, potential content censorship in future games, and the loss of creative independence. It's just a messy, complicated reality. And it matters to you, the listener, because the fate of the games you play every day is now tied directly to a spreadsheet managing an $18 billion debt load.
Yeah, it's a huge transition. And interestingly, while EA is being forced into this highly corporatized, financially pressured future, Microsoft is doing the exact opposite right now.
Oh, right, with the whole retro push.
Yeah, they are looking backward, investing heavily in preserving their gaming history rather than just monetizing the future.
Moving from the boardroom to the digital archives. So Microsoft's leaked roadmap confirms they are bringing Xbox 360 games natively to PC through official emulation.
Which is a massive technical undertaking. I mean, the Xbox 360 was built on a very specific tri-core power PC architecture.
And modern PCs don't use that at all.
No, they run on x86 architecture. So emulation isn't just copying files. It requires the PC to translate those complex power PC instructions into x86 instructions on the fly.
Right.
And that requires massive computational overhead.
But, I mean, I know there are community-built emulators out there like Xenia, which runs hundreds of games.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this official push so different?
Well, Xenia is an incredible open-source achievement, but it requires serious technical know-how to configure and, you know, constantly troubleshoot. Microsoft has the proprietary source code and the original hardware documentation.
Oh, so they can just bypass all the guesswork?
Exactly. They can optimize that translation layer right at the operating system level, ensuring stability and performance that the open source community simply can't achieve. This is a monumental shift toward a unified ecosystem where players can access their libraries across PCs, consoles, and upcoming handhelds.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting. The sources outline a program launching in August 2026 called Disk to Digital.
This is wild.
Yeah. So if you have an Xbox One or a Series X or S, you pop your physical game disc into the drive, it installs, and Microsoft grants you a permanent digital license for that game on your account.
Which means your physical collection is permanently converted into a digital library that you can play on a PC without a disc drive.
Okay, I have to ask the obvious question here. If a physical disc gives you a permanent digital license and you no longer need the disc to play, doesn't this entirely destroy the used game market?
It sounds like it would, yeah.
Like, what stops someone from converting a game to digital and then just handing the disc to five friends so they can all claim a free digital copy?
Right. So the underlying DRM, or digital rights management, prevents exactly that scenario. Every physical disc pressed has a unique embedded serial identifier.
Okay, so it tracks the specific disc.
Yeah. When you insert the disc and claim the digital license, Microsoft's servers associate that specific identifier with your account. It acts as a one-time burn.
Oh, wow.
The physical disc is basically hollowed out in terms of its digital value. You'd still hand it to a friend to play offline on a traditional console, but they can never use it to claim a digital license.
That is a brilliant bridge between physical media and a purely digital future. They are rolling out four original Xbox games to PC in October 2026 with full 360 emulation between 2027 and 2028.
It's coming fast.
Think about what this means for you. Those old physical game discs sitting in your closet are about to become highly valuable, permanent digital assets. It's software precision doing something genuinely magical.
And that software precision is essentially what enables our next story, mapping the virtual world onto the literal stratosphere. The physical engineering required for SpaceX's upcoming Flight 14 is hard to overstate.
Late August 2026. This is the one that just completely blows my mind. This is the first time SpaceX is going to attempt to catch the 120-meter tall upper stage of their Starship, the ship, using the launch tower's mechanical arms, which they call the chopsticks.
Yeah, we've watched them catch the Super Heavy booster a few times, but catching the upper stage is an entirely different beast.
Because it's coming from space.
Right. The ship is descending from orbit, coming through the atmosphere at orbital velocity. They have to scrub all that speed, orient the vehicle, and bring it to a dead hover between two metal arms.
It's basically like throwing a 40-story skyscraper into space and on its way back down, trying to catch the penthouse with a pair of giant mechanical chopsticks at thousands of miles an hour.
It really is.
But seriously, why do this? Why risk destroying the launch tower and the rocket just to catch it in midair? Why not just land it on legs like they do with the Falcon 9?
Because of the ruthless physics of mass, think of landing gear like packing a heavy winter coat for a summer vacation.
Okay.
You have to carry that dead weight with you the entire trip, all the way to space and back, even though it serves zero purpose during the actual mission.
Right, it's just dead weight.
Exactly. Every ounce of heavy hydraulic landing gear and heat shielding required for legs is payload capacity you lose. By keeping the landing gear on the ground, the chopsticks, the rocket is significantly lighter. It can carry far more cargo.
Oh, that makes total sense.
Plus, catching it directly on the tower means they can inspect it and immediately restack it for another launch. Rapid reusability is the only way they hit their target of 50 flights per year by 2027.
And the payload they're carrying on Flight 14 is exactly why they need that extra capacity. They are deploying the first operational Starlink V3 satellites.
These things are absolute monsters.
Yeah, 2 tons each, 7 meters long. They are physically too massive to fit inside the older Falcon 9 rockets.
The capability loop is massive, too. The V3 satellites are 10 times faster with sub-10 millisecond latency.
Which means soon, you could have fiber optic internet speeds with zero lag, whether you live in downtown Manhattan or, you know, in a cabin in the woods.
Exactly.
But this massive physical undertaking brings us to a really fascinating contradiction. Building the infrastructure of the future is incredibly expensive, and Wall Street is far more worried about the gravity on SpaceX's balance sheet than actual gravity.
Yeah, we are looking at a classic CapEx shock here, capital expenditure. In their Q2 2026 earnings, SpaceX reported some stellar top-line numbers, but the market punished them severely.
Drudely.
The stock has crashed 50% since its IPO, dropping 8% just this week.
Right, so let's look at these numbers. They generated almost $8 billion in revenue, which crushed expectations. But they spent more than double that, over $18 billion in capital expenditures in a single quarter.
Yeah.
Where's all that money going?
The vast majority, almost $16 billion of it, went straight into physical infrastructure for their AI division, following the xAI acquisition.
Wow.
They are building massive, sprawling data centers packed with hundreds of thousands of high-end GPUs to train large language models. The contrast internally is stark. The Starlink Internet division is a cash cow, bringing in nearly $1.7 billion in operating income.
Right.
But investors are terrified that SpaceX is setting that cash on fire in a saturated AI market, trying to compete against Google, OpenAI, and Anthropic.
I really have to push back on this investor panic, though. I mean, the AI division isn't just a money pit. The sources say that division alone generated $2.6 billion in revenue this quarter, with a positive EBITDA. They are projecting $100 billion in annual recurring revenue by December.
The growth is undeniable.
Right. So why is the market punishing them so brutally for building the data centers that are actively printing money?
Because public markets operate on a totally different psychology. Investors are looking at the sheer scale of the GPU investments and questioning the sustainability of those profit margins. Well, training AI models is a bottomless pit of computational costs and power grid demands. If these AI models become commoditized, meaning everyone has a slightly different version of the same smart AI, the profit margins collapse. The market wants sustainable, boring profitability today, not the volatile promise of a monopoly tomorrow.
It just shows you that even a company building the future of humanity isn't immune to the impatience of the stock market.
Definitely not.
And speaking of immense power and impatience, we move from the market gatekeepers holding companies accountable to digital gatekeepers holding our daily communications hostage. August 3rd, 2026. For exactly 40 minutes, the messaging app Telegram was completely removed from the iOS App Store.
Removing an app with over a billion users without warning is an explosive event. Apple cited the discovery of child sexual abuse material, or CSAM, during a routine automated review. They pulled the app.
And then what happened?
Telegram located the offending user, removed the content, and 40 minutes later, Apple restored the app.
And the sources note that Telegram is actively moderating this stuff. You know, they have removed nearly 340,000 of these illegal groups in 2026 alone.
Right. Apple maintains this was just a standard enforcement of their safety guidelines. They have strict legal and moral obligations to ensure illegal content is not distributed through their storefront.
Obviously.
But the CEO of Telegram, Pavel Durov, framed this entirely differently. He called it cyber extortion.
Right. Durov claims that bad actors deliberately use AI tools to generate this illegal content and flooded Telegram with it for the express purpose of triggering Apple's automated safety reviews to get the app banned.
Which is a terrifying tactic.
So what does this all mean? If his claim is true, doesn't that mean these automated moderation systems are actually a massive vulnerability? Like, could a bad actor just weaponize Apple's safety rules to completely destroy a competitor's app?
That is the exact systemic risk Durov is highlighting here. Automated takedown systems rely on pattern matching and algorithmic flags.
Right.
If a malicious group can swarm a platform with illegal AI-generated content faster than human moderators can intercept it, they can trigger an automatic ban from the App Store.
Wow.
It is a massive vulnerability. It forces us to ask how we balance the vital need to instantly remove harmful content with the need for transparency and due process before wiping a billion-user app off the map.
It is a stark reminder for you listening. The digital tools you rely on to text your friends, manage your business, and communicate every single day exist entirely at the whim of these massive centralized gatekeepers. They can disappear in minutes.
And that profound digital vulnerability is exactly what drives people toward decentralized systems, where no single corporation has the power to just turn off your access.
Which brings us to our final source, Ethereum and the crypto world. People want decentralized control.
Yeah.
But the glaring problem is that crypto is incredibly difficult and, honestly, dangerous for the average person to navigate.
It is notoriously unforgiving. I mean, the Ethereum network currently secures over 34 million staked ETH, which is about $108 billion in value.
Huge.
But securing your personal slice of that value usually means relying on a standard crypto wallet known as an externally owned account.
And a standard wallet is just a cryptographic key. If you lose your private key or accidentally sign a malicious transaction, your money is gone. Permanently. There's no customer service line to call.
None. There are alternatives called smart accounts. These are controlled by complex smart contracts rather than a single key.
Okay.
They allow for incredible features like wallet recovery or setting daily spending limits, but they are incredibly difficult to set up, require technical expertise, and historically required entirely separate infrastructure to function.
Enter Ethereum's upcoming Petra upgrade and a proposal called EIP-7702.
Yeah. EIP-7702 implements something called account abstraction directly at the base protocol layer. It fundamentally changes how a transaction works. During a transaction, this upgrade temporarily injects smart contract code into your standard simple wallet address.
So it's basically like having a cheap canvas wallet in your pocket. But the exact second you go to buy something, the network magically transforms it into a high-security bank vault with a daily spending limit and a security guard.
Exactly.
And then, once the transaction is done, the vault vanishes, and it turns right back into that simple canvas wallet.
That is a perfect visualization of the mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
The smart contract bytecode is active only for the duration of the transaction. Because this happens at the base layer of the network, developers can implement it immediately without building new side networks.
So what does that actually let users do?
It enables gasless transactions, where an app pays the network fees for you. It enables social recovery, meaning a trusted group of friends or devices can help you recover access if you lose your key.
That's huge.
And it allows for hard spending limits. So even if a hacker breaches your wallet, they physically cannot drain your life savings.
This is massive. It finally removes that terrifying anxiety of crypto, you know, that fear that one wrong click means permanent ruin. It brings the safety of the traditional banking world to the decentralized internet.
It dramatically lowers the barrier to entry. It makes decentralized finance accessible and safe for the general public without compromising on the underlying technology.
Well, this has been an incredible journey. Just to recap the sheer scope of what we've unpacked today, we looked at Saudi Arabia's $55 billion leveraged buyout of EA and how debt changes game design.
Right.
Microsoft preserving Xbox history through complex emulation. SpaceX shedding dead weight to catch 40-story rockets out of the sky.
The billions being poured into AI data centers.
Yeah, and the fragile reality of automated app moderation. Plus, Ethereum fundamentally rewriting how digital wallets operate to protect users.
You know, if we draw a line through all of these sources, there's a distinct pattern that emerges. We're watching the end of traditional permanence.
Okay, I mean,
look at the underlying mechanisms in every story. EA's legacy of games is no longer just art. It is a fluid financial instrument meant to service $18 billion in debt. Microsoft is taking physical permanent game discs and converting them into temporary digital keys.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right. And SpaceX is taking massive physical rockets, traditionally single use, permanent monuments to engineering, and trying to make them fluid, rapidly reusable commodities. And Ethereum is literally allowing a static digital address to temporarily change its state and identity on the fly.
Wow. Everything is becoming temporary, fluid, or entirely digital.
It raises a lingering question for the future. In a world where your internet infrastructure, your money, and your digital entertainment are constantly shifting states and managed by remote servers, what happens to the concept of actual physical ownership?
That is definitely something to mull over next time you look at your banking app or boot up a game. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. You are now officially the most well-informed person in the room. We'll see you next time.